Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You have a sense of doom hanging over you for tonight's game? Or are you able to, compartmentalize, put the loss to the side and say, hey, one loss, doesn't matter by how many, and boom, you move on?
I compartmentalize 7 and 8 point losses. 27 point losses. It just hangs over me a little bit, Hawk.
Understood. Let's head out to the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. Talk to James Herbert, NBA writer for CBSSports.com. Had him on the show before. Enjoyed talking basketball with him. Hello, James.
How's it going?
So what do the Heat need to do? I am guessing we're all in agreement they need to do something different to get past the Sixers. Do you take anything from Saturday night's game, Saturday night's Heat-Sixers game? Do you take anything as a positive for Miami?
I didn't think the offense was bad. I mean, the main issue was they gave up so many points. I mean, I don't think the Sixers are going to shoot like 65% from three again. But, I mean, coming into the series, my main concern for Miami was how this team is going to score against Philadelphia. I mean, the Sixers have had one of the best defenses in the league, and Miami, while very deep and versatile, doesn't quite have the top, like, high-end scoring as some other teams in the playoffs. So that was my concern, but in that area, I didn't think they were that bad in the first game. I mean, especially in the first half, I thought they were doing pretty well. It was just when Philly got going, when his offense was humming, when the ball was flying around the court and Ben Simmons was getting in the paint wherever he wanted, that's when things didn't look good. And obviously the particularly scary thing about what happened in game one is the Sixers did that. They blew the Heat out without their best player.
And James, it sounded like you were trying to be nice. The Heat are deep and they struggle to score. You didn't say the word talented. Like, as you watched that game, did you see the Heat being talented enough to beat these 76ers, James? Because they looked like they were younger, they were faster, they were just more talented.
I mean, the Sixers are more talented. I think everybody knew that coming in to this series. Like, that isn't new. The Heat, I think their strength really all season long is they can throw a lot of different looks at teams, and they just sort of can overwhelm you with their aggressiveness and the fact that these guys just keep coming. And I think I'm interested to see if the rotation changes at all in game two. It was sort of an interesting one in game one. Like, they kind of had to go and play Kelly Olynyk major minutes because whenever he was off the court that they were kind of discombobulated. I think it was a really, really rough night for Hassan Whiteside, who only managed like 12 minutes, was not effective when he was out there. And you have to wonder if he can bounce back in this next game, or if maybe they only really need him when they need his size when Joel Embiid is back in the lineup. I'm not sure, honestly. I mean, I'm a big Josh Richardson guy. I love the way he played this season, but that was not a great game one for him on the offensive end in particular. I think the Heat do have enough talent to win a couple of games in this series. I predicted the Sixers would win in six, but I mean, they have enough talent to make it not easy on Philly, and things just looked really easy in the second half for them. That was what was worrying.
James Herbert, CBSSports.com, is with us. You mentioned Hassan Whiteside. Obviously, the 12 minutes played and the 2 points and the seemingly lethargic attitude. We debated on the show earlier because Ira Winderman had written something in the Sun Sentinel about, have the Heat quit on Hassan Whiteside or did Hassan Whiteside quit on the Heat? There's kind of a chicken and egg thing going on there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how to even answer that question because, like, to me, it's sort of the player's responsibility to when he is in there to play as hard as possible and try to be effective. And as a coach, I think Spoelstra is thinking, well, he started, I gave him a chance, and it wasn't working, so he went in a different direction. And I'm sure Hassan Whiteside, like most players, when they get yanked early, when they're not getting the regular minutes, they say, well, I need time out there to get my rhythm. I need touches if I'm going to be effective. But, I mean, the Heat aren't going to build their entire offense around Hassan Whiteside. They're not just going to pound the ball in the post to him. That's not the way that they play. And I think if he is going to earn his minutes, if he's going to justify himself being out there when the Heat have other options, especially offensively, he needs to be a beast on the inside protecting the rim. He needs to move his feet when he's defending the pick and roll, and he needs to just like dive really hard in the pick and rolls on the other end and try to create vertical spacing and help his teammates out that way. Because what he's not going to do is he's not going to do the stuff Kelly Olynyk does, where you can have him running dribble handoffs on the perimeter, where he's passing to cutters, where he's spacing the floor from the three-point line. So Hassan Whiteside has to do it his way, and if it means being productive in limited minutes and being okay with that, then like that's what like you have to do, and you have to be okay with that. If that's your role in the series, you have to accept it.
I think we're all in agreement that he was not productive. He was not hustling or whatever. But are you okay with him only ending up with 12 minutes, though? In other words, you don't think Spo yanked him too soon and didn't give him enough chance to get into a rhythm?
No, I mean, they were doing much better without him. That's the thing, is like the way this Heat team is built. Like, you can have some nights where Wayne Ellington is the best player on the floor and he plays 30, 32 minutes. Like, he I think, played like 18, 19, something like that in that game. They just have so many options on the wing. And the same is true up front. I mean, they can go small. I think Olynyk really opens up a lot of things offensively. And against a team like the Sixers, like I said, a staunch defense, a bunch of athletic guys that can switch, that are really aggressive and can force turnovers. I think they need to play Olynyk. And Bam Adebayo brings a different skill set, too. And I think the way he played in his rookie season, that justified him getting rotation minutes. I think, look, this is that game one you can call a feeling out game. And if you do want to throw it out the window, especially if you're a Heat fan, I understand doing that, because we have seen this in the past. People overreact to the first game. They think one guy who was not effective in the first game, they're just not right for this series, whatever. No, like Hassan Whiteside could still find his place in the series, but that doesn't mean Spoelstra was wrong to yank him in the first game.
And James, talking about like running, you know, having Whiteside involved, I always ask the question of that old school center, that 7-footer, could they keep up? You look at like Al Horford where he shoots, yeah, or, you know, the Anthony Davis, like the game's changing where if we left Whiteside in, if we gave Whiteside 30 minutes, could you keep up? Because they scored 130 points, speaking of the 76ers. We can score 130 running the ball through a center.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, the mentality was always like, I can remember the Thunder a few years ago. They'd start Kendrick Perkins, and like they would just like sort of throw a few possessions in the trash every game by being like, we're just going to give him this post up because we think if he touches the ball, if he feels it, it doesn't matter if he turns it over, he's going to be more engaged. He's going to play harder defensively. He's going to rebound. He's going to set harder screens. We have to feed the big guy. I think that era is gone. Like, if you're a big man, you have to do the exact things your team needs you to do when you're on the court to be effective. I think Clint Capella last night in that Rockets game is a perfect example. I mean, he did end up putting up numbers in that game, but it wasn't because they were just beating him on the block. It wasn't because they were running the offense through him. He was beating Karl-Anthony Towns down the floor every single time, just sprinting, and he was a great lob target for James Harden, and he completely affected that game, almost dominated it, like outplayed Towns in that game because of his defense, because of his aggression, because of his attitude. And I mean, that I'm not saying Hassan Whiteside is going to turn into Clint Capella every night, but he sort of needs to play like that, if that makes sense.
I think it's funny that now, 2 years later, we're hoping that Hassan Whiteside can turn into Clint Capella for a night. the way things have changed.
Ooh, if we had Clint
Capella
now. It was
like, I'm telling you, 2 years ago, I think we were comparing him to Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell. Yeah. And now we're like, if you could get one Clint Capella game out of him, everything will be fine. Things change.
The league has changed, man. And like, the role of a center has changed. Like, and honestly, unless you are somebody like Joel Embiid, who you'll see in this series soon, like there really aren't that many centers that just automatically require a double team and can change a game that way. Embiid is one of them. Whiteside on his best night can be that guy, but like he is not that consistently, right? And I think he has this reputation as this amazing defender, and he can affect games that way. But I mean, he often, you know, there's been this big debate for years over like how much he actually helps the defense because of his plus minus numbers and blah, blah, blah. We don't need to relitigate that now. But he is not that like perfect modern age rim protecting, rim running center. He has some of the qualities of that. But I think if that was just who he was, then he wouldn't have these issues where he is getting benched in the fourth quarter and he's unhappy about it. He wouldn't have these issues where no, it's actually legitimately better to have Kelly Olynyk out there for the offense to function in game one of the playoffs.
James Herbert covers the NBA for CBSSports.com. Let me quickly just go a couple other places. Cleveland, is there reason to be worried for the Cavs?
Sure. I don't think you overreact and you say, all right, the Pacers are going to win this series now. But I think if the Cavs don't bring the proper effort and intensity, which they didn't in the first game, then they could be exposed. I mean, they have a roster where they can no longer afford to take possessions off, to not approach things the right way. I think all year long, no matter how bad things were on defense, you were still like, all right, the offense is going to be fine. You have LeBron, they're going to put up points. Well, guess what? They scored 80 points in game one. Like, they just were disjointed from the opening tip, throwing the ball away offensively. A lot of these role players are missing shots, but I mean, Jeff Green, when you're counting on him to space the floor, the Pacers are going to dare him to shoot. I think there's a bit of a problem with the roster in that it's hard for Tyronn Lue to find lineups that can be effective both offensively and defensively at the same time. That has been somewhat of an issue for the past few years, but in the past few years, you could play your best defensive lineups and just have LeBron and Kyrie as a part of it and hope those guys will bail you out. And if they no longer have Kyrie, Kevin Love did not do much offensively at all in game one, so it was just sort of up to LeBron, and LeBron played well. But his triple-double was almost kind of meaningless because he didn't really have enough help in that game. And I think they let some of their offensive struggles, which they're not used to, carry over to the defensive end, which has been a major issue for them all season long. I think the Pacers really came out and made a statement. They've played with this like really professional, balanced approach all season long. And I think I wouldn't pick them to win the series, but I don't think it's going to be easy for the Cavs. I think Indiana should be taken more seriously than they were by a lot of people going into the series.
James, you talk about LeBron's help. This has to be the worst roster he's ever taken into a playoff run.
Well, that's kind of up to debate. I think if everybody is healthy and if they're on the same page, then this roster could be potent than you're saying. I mean, when you look at last night, like George Hill played like 19 minutes, played I think 3 minutes in the second half because of a foot injury. He did not practice today. That's supposed to be their proper two-way point guard who can really shut down opposing guards and space the floor. He was a non-factor. Kyle Korver was, besides LeBron, their most consistent player over the course of the season, one of the best shooters in the league, and he barely played. He misses practice today because he's sick. Rodney Hood is a guy that I thought would be a bigger part of the team than he has been, did not really make his presence felt that much in that game, but I think there is a higher ceiling there. And they didn't even bother playing Tristan Thompson. And I thought going into the series, one of the advantages they might have against this Pacers team that was terrible at rebounding throughout the regular season is you play Love and Thompson together. Maybe you can dominate the glass, get some extra possessions. I think there is more potential here. But you're right. In terms of just help from LeBron, in terms of playmaking, in terms of guys that can break down the defense and get a shot when the defense is really good and the offense is sort of stagnating, they don't have that. They turn to LeBron in those situations exclusively, and I think that can wear on a guy.
James Herbert, CBSSports.com. Heat and Sixers tonight, game two. Heat plus 6.5. Who you got?
I got the Sixers. In the series, I have the Sixers in six games. So I'm assuming the Heat will win one of the next two, but the way the Sixers came out in the first game, I find it hard to bet against them right now.
Yeah, understood. Thank you for making time for us, James.
Thanks for having me.
James Herbert, read his work, CBSSports.com. Quick break for us. We'll come right back.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.